You're listening to Vulcan Hello, the Incomparable's only podcast dedicated to new Star Trek. I am Scott McNulty, joined, as always, by Mr. Jason Snell. Hello, Jason.
Hello, Scott. How are you?
I'm being hunted by some unseen aliens.
Oh no. Well, I recommend find your nearest brown dwarf star and hide inside.
Only if it's near a black hole. They just keep adding on tension levels here.
Levels of tension.
Of course, you know, if you're listening, what we're talking about, Strange New Worlds. No, that's not what it's called. Well, it is called that, but first it's called Star Trek : Strange New Worlds. Got to get the branding in there. Season 1, Episode 4, Memento Mori.
Now, which, Scott... A memento mori is a reminder of mortality.
Yes, that may be a reference to that. In ancient history, a triumphal Roman general or military figure would be in a procession, and there would be a slave that was standing behind him because they were all men. So, that said, you know, you are mortal. Remember, you are mortal. Yes. Over and over again, as they were being lauded by their fellows for, you know, subjugating some, you know, harmless tribe probably. Yep. And stealing all their goods and their people as well, because the Romans generally were not very nice. That's my hot take about the Romans.
Dang. I'm going to make some Roman Empire people. We're going to get a lot of tweets from the Roman Empire.
Oh, dear. They have to carve them into stone. It takes them a while.
So it's a, yeah. So memento mori here, the memory of mortality.
Yes, this is all about.
In this.
Yeah, there's, you know, some traumatic episodes from people's pasts. There's some tie-ins to other Star Trek properties.
Oh, yes.
Other recent Star Trek properties. And this episode is basically, with all of that, it is a submarine episode a la Balance of Terror as
yes,
well.
Yes, indeed. I had one other thing happen to me today, Scott, that I should mention before we get started, which is I drank the fourth strange new tea today.
Ooh, tell us all about it.
It's true. It's from strangenewteas.com, the New Mexico Tea Company, our sponsor for this whole run of episodes. And this one was Illyrian Light.
Oh.
Which is a blend of black tea from China, India, and Sri Lanka with a touch of smokiness. And that's exactly how I would describe it. It's a very much like a breakfast tea, except if you give it a little sniff, there is just this little kind of smoky flavor to it. And I enjoyed it greatly. Actually, I had it with a little honey, although you probably could have it with milk, and that would be really nice. Or just straight up, as it was, 373 Kelvin. For 300 seconds, as you do, as you make tea. And it was really great. So our sponsor, you go to strangenewteas.com and you can, there's a new tea every week for Strange New Worlds. You can shop those individual teas and choose one that sounds good to you and order it. You can also sign up for the $50 Strange New Tea of the Week. You'll get all the ones that have already shipped so far, four so far, and then you'll get a new one every week in the mail to try out. It's a fun way to try different kinds of, there was like the one that had like, was it like banana-y pieces or something last time? And there have been four so far, but I had number four. Finally, I'm on brand. Mm. For our sponsor, and it was very nice. So check it out, and I get all my tea from New Mexico Tea Company. So strangenewteas.com, thank you for sponsoring this podcast. Yes. And now we can go back Scott, I watched a little bit of Arena this last week in anticipation of this episode.
Yes, and, the Gorn's first appearance.
Yeah, and so I appreciated that they are making, you know, this episode not only does a shout out to Balance of Terror, obviously, but to Arena, which also begins with going to a seemingly fine colony and discovering it destroyed by the Gorn. And then they chase the spaceship and the Metrons come and it gets weird. But
the Metrons always make things weird.
Yeah. Yeah. That's an interesting episode. But here it's a little more straightforward of what if there were no Metrons to cause trouble. And instead, it was just the Gorn laying a trap, destroying a colony, taking a bunch of people, and then also kind of waiting to see if they could catch a starship, which they do. So I was struck that definitely there are those scenes where they beam down to the planet, and it's pretty quick, right? It's good stuff. It's dark, and they've got their phasers mm-hmm. out, and there's a dog. Hope they save that dog. Right? You got to go back for the dog. Like the Gorn aren't interested in the dog, apparently, but
I guess not.
It's like, no, leave that. We're here for the humans. But that was a scene really reminiscent, except in lighting, of Arena. And Arena, of course, it's a very Arenas. Brightly lit corporate campus in Southern California somewhere where that is Cestus 3. So
yes, and Arena, which is a good episode of Star Trek.
It's I was going to say
great, but it's got some the Gorn move very slowly,
yeah.
It could do with a little speeding up. But they use that to great effect because, you know, it's just a guy in this big, uncomfortable costume who couldn't move very quickly. So hence the Gorn cannot move very quickly. But I think they use that very effectively to build tension in that episode. And in this episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, they build tension in like 12 different ways. The Enterprise is being hunted. It's stuck in a brown dwarf that's being sucked into a black hole. There's some kind of piece of malfunctioning equipment that's gonna blow up. There's a lot going on to put our lovely characters in peril.
Yeah, it's there's a lot here. Is this a time where we say whether we liked it or not?
Yes. Did you like this episode, Jason?
Scott, I thought this was the best episode yet.
Ooh.
So big praise. Turnaround from last week where I thought it was the worst episode yet of three. But this is number one now. I liked it a lot. How did you feel about it?
I liked it as well. I was wondering if we would actually see the Gorn. So I thought to myself, but is Star Trek canon? No one has seen the Gorn yet, although, as Lon points out, many people have seen them, but they've just been eaten, so they can't really tell you.
That's right. Less helpful. They don't report back about it.
So I was like, oh no, are they going to show us the Gorn? And then this will be a big controversy. But they don't, which I think actually is very effective in kind of as storytelling, because you never see these people who are trying to kill our friends, basically. So I like that. Although I did like it, and here's my problem that I'm having, Jason, and I don't know if it's a problem or not, but I've enjoyed Strange New Worlds, but I feel like it's almost on the cusp of just being kind of a remake of other episodes of Star Trek. And I don't know if that's a problem or not. I think it isn't yet. But I would like to see something more from Strange New Worlds, I think. And I feel like I'm enjoying it so much. I'm not complaining, but I'm like, maybe they could push it a little bit.
Yeah.
I feel like they're being a little safe.
Yeah, I agree. And I've got some individual criticisms. There are some things in this episode that bug me a little bit. I have several people point out to me, well, it's Star Trek. The original series did a lot of silly stuff too. It's true. I would like to think that in 2022, some of these things could be like, maybe don't do that, but they still did some and they bugged me a little bit. But the fact is, it was very entertaining. We'll talk about maybe what the issues are and also what they did really well. But I agree with you. It's a tough thing because they really do want to capture that original series kind of flavor, but have it be a modern version of it. And I think they're doing that.
Yes.
But I think that what's happening in these first episodes is that they're trying to establish not only the characters of the show, but establish the kind of variety of stories that they can tell. And just as the casting and the characters they chose to put in this episode pushes, I think, maybe a little too hard on bringing back what Will Wheaton calls legacy characters in the Ready Room, right? Which is characters from TOS, essentially. Which I think that there didn't need to be as many as there are who are literally characters we saw in TOS. I think a couple fewer would have been okay. But on top of that, I think that the plots are also similarly like trying to replay some of the hits from TOS. Like you said, I agree. I think I understand them doing that this early on in the show, that they kind of want to establish the show and what it can be. And looking to TOS for inspiration is not bad. I think it's more, if I could channel what you were saying and maybe amplify it a little bit, I think it's more, I hope that the show uses this as a starting point to go and find its own path and tell its own stories, because playing things that are nostalgic and remind you of TOS is nice, but I don't want every episode to be that. And so they do need to like get out of their way a little bit as they accelerate toward, you know, the end of season one and then moving into season two. They need to have a little confidence that not every story needs to use elements from the past and characters from the past. And you need to chart your own course a little bit too.
Yes, that's exactly what I think. I mean, don't get me wrong. I think it's a really good episode of Star Trek. I just kind of got that moment of, I feel like I have seen this episode of Star Trek, and I enjoyed it then. I enjoy it now, but I appreciate what they were trying to do with Discovery, which is kind of tell something new and push Star Trek in a new direction a little bit. I know they got a little burned on that because there's mixed feelings about how successful they were. But so I don't want them to just retreat to the tried and true formula and just kind of do a retread, which I feel like they're getting close, but not crossing the line yet. But I worry.
I think what they're doing too is they're trying to serve these characters and give us a lot of good character moments inside familiar stories. Which I get as the start, but I would like them to spread their wings a little bit. I actually don't mind that they made this the Gorn and that La'an has this whole story arc about her, you know, being terrorized by the Gorn as a child and how they're a pretty interesting adversary because they're kind of ruthless and their technology is strong enough and that nobody's seen them other than her and all the people they ate. all of that is pretty good. So I don't want to say like using the Gorn as a retread here, but yeah, I agree that it was. All the legacy characters plus the Gorn plus the balance of terror style episode. You stack them all, and it's like that's so much that is referencing the past that I don't think you needed all of it. Even though this is a good episode, I think it's like, please, I don't want every episode of Strange New Worlds to be all characters you've seen, guest stars who are characters you've seen, aliens that you've seen, and plots you've seen, right? Like, it's too many of the same thing.
Exactly. And I think that picking the Gorn as giving La'an that kind of backstory with the Gorn and having the Gorn in this episode was the right choice, because I feel like the Gorn are an iconic Star Trek thing that hasn't really been explored a lot.
We know nothing about them. There's like, there's a Gorn in that Enterprise Mirror Mirror episode, which is like, it's a mirror universe, so who cares? Just you forget about it. And then Lower Decks has done some funny things. There's a Gorn wedding in Lower Decks.
There's a Gorn wedding, yes. Funny.
But like, I was thinking about it, especially after Discovery spent all that time plumbing the Klingons, and Picard has spent so much time with the Borg that I thought it was actually kind of refreshing. Like, if you're not going to invent a new alien, which might be weird for a show set when Strange New Worlds is set, like the Gorn is not a bad choice in that there's very little ground there other than we know that Kirk, you know, punches him on that planet later.
And shoots him with a bamboo.
Yeah, bamboo cannon. Full of diamonds.
Yes. And spoilers for the arena.
Sorry, we blew it. Kirk wins, but he doesn't kill him because we're not going to kill today. Well, that's not what he says. It's not the same episode, but you know what I mean. It's Kirk's Kirk's thing. We're more civilized than that. It's a good choice, I think, because they're creepy and they're playing up. They're kind of like creepy. They want to eat us. They're a monster. Starfleet always wants to think that if we can empathize with somebody, then it'll be okay. Not be okay, La'an says, and she's an interesting character. Talk about a brand new character, even though she's Noonien Singh, but still she's a brand new character who is interesting in her quirks that are not like super by the book how you expect a Starfleet person to be, but in the best way of your security officer who's got to be cranky and say, no, I think we should fire or put the shields up or kill those people or whatever. And everybody else is like, whoa. And they're like, what? Look, it's my job to do this, okay?
I am paid to do this.
You all, you know, and this is twice in four episodes where she's basically done an emergency communication to Pike to have him do some security thing, right? Like, this is her, okay. This is her thing. So, all of that stuff with the Gorn, I think it's a good choice. I suspect we are going to be seeing them again.
And I think the Gorn will come back.
And I think that's good. I think that's a good kind of running bit where you can tell some different stories with a scary menace that's out there as they're exploring. So that's all fine. I mean, I think it's interesting trying to calibrate where they're taking this show. Like, how do you make it nostalgic in some ways, but not overly nostalgic / fan servicey? And so far, I'd say I've liked it all, but I don't want it all to be exactly like this. Now, my understanding is that next week's episode is a rom-com, kind of, so we'll see. Let's try that too, because I do think that they're trying on a whole bunch of different genres and different story types here at the beginning of season one, trying to figure out sort of what show they are, and that's good. That's all good. It's just, it was, fortunately, there was not a scene where the Gorn captain instructed for the Gorn centurion's body to be put in the waste dump, because that would have been a little too on the nose for Balance of Terror. Spoilers for Balance of Terror. The centurion doesn't make it.
Oh, R.I.P. Centurion. Balance of Terror is such a good episode.
It is. It is, and you get the sense that the producers of Strange New World said, you know that. Also, TNG, they said, TNG's episode Disaster, it was an inspiration, and you can see that in the Uhura Hemmer stuff, and really number one in Sick Bay with Mbenga and Chapel, where you've got kind of other stories, the B and C stories on the ship that are essentially... there has been a disaster, and how do we handle the tension of that while the cat and mouse game with the Gorn is going on in the A plot. And so it was familiar of that too. And if I've had a real criticism of the storytelling in the first four episodes, it's probably that they are trying too hard, as we've been saying, and also a little too much. Like, I had somebody, you always talk about how Discovery is about characters more than it is about plot. This is, so far, Strange New Worlds has been like, well, we're going to still do all the character stuff, but also we're going to do all the plot stuff. And it's like, maybe there's a little too much, like a little one complication too many, where it feels a little bit overstuffed so that they have to cut corners in their storytelling. And that's something that I felt in this episode too, is like, everything just happens at such a pace, which is good, but it feels like, even some of their good ideas get kind of short shrift, where it's like, this probably should have been three scenes and it's two scenes because they have too many other things in the episode.
Yeah, I mean, I thought they did a good job of building the tension, but it almost got to be ridiculous, the number of things that they were dealing with at the same time.
The black hole, and as a person who's interested in science, I will say, stellar evolution, black holes, brown dwarfs, stars, all that stuff, this happens on scales of depending on the size of the star, hundreds of thousands of years, millions of years, billions of years, tens of billions of years, hundreds of billions of years. So when they are like, oh, there's a brown dwarf here, and don't even mention the black hole, and then they're in the brown dwarf and they're like, well, the black hole's sucking in the brown dwarf right now. It's like, well, you should have known that the moment you entered the system, because these things are not surprises. Black holes are not like... black holes are weird, but they just behave following the laws of gravity. Like, they still have mass, and things still orbit them, and they're not magic, right? And that was one the moment where it was fun, but that felt like the unnecessary complication in the episode. Like, you know what, a game of cat and mouse and a brown dwarf is probably all you need. You probably don't also need a black hole And even if the black hole was there, you don't need a ticking clock where they have to leave the brown dwarf because the black hole's about to eat it. Like, there could have been another reason for them to leave. It just felt like it was so many things stacked on top of each other. And it didn't need to be. It was fine. It was very exciting as it was.
It was very exciting. I'm sure someone had the idea of using the black hole as a slingshot and dropping the piece of equipment that was exploding.
The air filter.
Just like, we need to do this.
Yeah,
and so the black hole stayed in. But I think you could accomplish the same things without the
black they could hole. Have been driven out of the brown dwarf and had to have, you know, they could have taken damage and said, we can't stay down here. What's our next move? And said, well, here's what we're going to do. But instead they're like, we have to go. There's a ticking clock. The black hole has just woken up and decided it's time for breakfast. And it's like, all right. I like that they're trying really hard, but it's like maybe a little too hard. Maybe you could keep it a little simpler.
Yes. And luckily, they didn't put a ticking clock on the air filter that was going to blow up, although it was implied that there... Well, actually, they did, right? It was like, we have 40 minutes, so there was a clock on that as well. So, too many clocks.
Hammer quoted some of that, and there was... things here that I really liked. I wanted to mention the Memorial Day, basically, right up at the top. I thought that was really great, the idea that... that on this special day, they all wear these pins that recognize, and obviously it's leading into the themes of the episode, but recognize the sacrifice of people who've been lost, and they wear a pin signifying the ship where they were with this person who was lost, died in duty. And there's a picture somewhere of like all the different pins that everybody's wearing, and somebody's got a Farragut pin, which is a good reference back to another TOS episode, right, where the like 200 people on the Farragut, including the captain, were eaten by an energy creature, but not Captain Kirk.
It happens.
That was Obsession, was that episode, another reference, but also Laan sort of like refusing to wear it and saying, no, I'm fine. I like her emotional outburst where she says, I have no emotions. And like, okay. And Pike's like, well, all right, sure. Right.
Sure. That's not how it seems to everyone else, but okay.
This is how I handle this. I don't get emotional. I'm like, all right. Anyway, that the idea that Starfleet actually has a sort of a memorial or remembrance day for those who died. I like that. That was a new idea that I thought was really, really cool.
I feel like it will get untenable the longer, just because people will have so many of those pins on their uniforms.
I think you only get to pick one. So you choose your favorite lost one this year. And then, there was that shot of Laan with the, there's a nice little match cut to the circle of the Enterprise and then the circle of the pin. But it looks like it comes with a little note from the commander in chief of Starfleet saying, I assume that's like, well, you know, please find enclosed the pin that you chose. And we wear this to signify this and all of that. And so everybody has to pick. And if you don't pick, they pick one for you. They look at your record and they just pick one and say, you know, remember Jerry, who was the transporter guy, number two on that ship you served on for 6 months? Well, yeah, but the transporter exploded and he died. So you get Jerry. Oh. This time. Well,
now I feel bad for thinking he was the worst.
Sorry, Jerry. So I think that you pick a ship, at least, if not a person, a ship to honor, and you get your pin for that year. And then you collect them and trade them with your friends or something. I don't know.
I did like that idea, though. I thought it was very touching, especially since it's Star Trek. They're space is dangerous, as they say in this episode. And a lot of the Star Trek, I mean, they're always in peril, but it feels like it's routine. Like it's this weird thing where it's just like, yeah, I'm here in space that's actively trying to kill me, but I'm also, you know, I have to brush my teeth. And so it's just a routine thing. So remembering that people die doing this kind of stuff because it's dangerous what we do is an interesting thing. And then, of course, it's by coincidence, these very dangerous things happen on this day where you're supposed to remember these things.
Yes.
So I liked it.
Yep. What else did I want to mention? I like the bit where Spock says, if we went down into the brown dwarf, it would be very bad. And Pike says, great idea, Spock. Let's go down there. Like, this is not what I said.
Spock was like, I did not.
It's so great. I thought that was really good. And I don't know if Pike is does Pike know something we don't? Because he says, basically, I believe in the Enterprise. And everybody else, I feel like, is like, but, you know, we're going to get crushed like a tin can. He's, no, I believe we won't.
Okay. I think he's the power of positive thinking.
I know.
He's like, I am the captain.
That's Pike.
I believe in the Enterprise. She will see us through.
Yeah.
And he's right. Does. Except for that one crew member who limps towards the,
right.
the closing doors.
And not only do they close the doors on him, so he's going to die, but as the doors are closing, there's an explosion and he's blown away. And
that's, he is blown away. So yes, it's like you can't even think, well, maybe he's behind he's behind that bulkhead.
Not now. No, he's dead.
He is definitely dead. He did not survive.
And they cut to the bridge and basically say, oh yeah, something exploded and that guy died. It's like, okay, all right.
I could confirm that guy is
dead. No mystery. That guy died. We lost a crew person, I believe she says, but it's like, yeah, mm-hmm. that guy died. He's a goner. He's an ex.
He's dead.
Somebody's going to get an Enterprise pin next year. That's all I'm saying.
That's right. A single tear. I did like, this is the moment where I thought, okay, I'm not sure, episode, if you're pandering to me or not, but I like it anyway. When Spock and La'an say, okay, we'll take a shuttlecraft to go, you know.
Check it out. Reconnoiter.
Check out the Gorn, who apparently don't have any sensors and can't notice us.
Yeah.
That was a weird thing. And Pike's like, great, take the Galileo. And I thought, there's no reason for him to say that. But I liked it.
Yeah. Yeah, it could have been at Columbus or whatever. But, you know, that's really, they shouldn't have Columbus. Anyway, I thought that was peculiar. So, yes, there's a thing where she remembers, like, her brother translating, and there's, like he's translating it from Morse code and all of that, which makes no sense. But at the very least, my headcanon is, like, he thought he was decoding Morse code, but what he did ultimately decipher was what the flickers actually mean in terms of the Gorn behavior, and that was useful. Mm-hmm. I don't understand. Yes, they go up there for very... very intangible reasons, just to check things out. They're not spotted. The two ships are communicating with each other via flashes. Then La'an communicates from where and how that...
From the shuttlecraft?
From the shuttlecraft. So you're the Gorn mothership, and a Federation shuttlecraft appears and flashes at you. The humans, they have taken over that ship, so you should destroy it. And they go, uh-oh, and destroy it. And then do they not flash back to they look back at the shuttlecraft and it's like, whoa, huh? It's gone. I don't know what's going on. That was also kind of a silly...
It was very strange.
...diversion in order to get the mind meld, which again, I'll also say, was that a little bit of a gratuitous mind meld? Yeah, a little bit. But,
a little bit.
But I did like her flashback and her brother. And
yes.
And
I liked... all of that story. I did not like the way that they chose to tell it to us, because I felt like they're in even more danger now in this shuttlecraft that theoretically the Gorn can see, but apparently they can't. And they're deciding, okay, well, now's a great time for me to do a mind meld and figure out what's going on with you.
I actually, and I wonder if there was a version of the script that had this, I felt like the right time to do that was when they were down on the planet, was for La'an to flash back to what happened to her when she was witnessing what the Gorn did to the people on the in the colony, right?
'Cause she sees it and it triggers those
but instead
emotions.
It does just a little bit, and then we have to wait for the mind meld for it to come out. It was fine, but it was one of those moments where I thought, oh, if I think about this too much, it's going to kind of not make any sense.
Yes.
Which is a little bit weird, but I get that they want to have they had a little Michael Burnham thing happen there.
I mean, I liked everything about it except that the setting and when it happened. I feel like it should have happened before they went onto the shuttlecraft at the very least.
Yeah, maybe. Or right after they came back.
Oh, yeah. Either. It doesn't matter.
They
can't flash the Gorn.
And again, I thought that was just kind of confusing that, like, they flashed the Gorn, but then the Gorn didn't do anything to them, but the Gorn took them at their word that this other ship was bad, so they blew it out of
it. Did the Gorn think that they were a Gorn ship just because they flashed?
Must have thought that, like, the ship that they sent down had gotten a shuttlecraft or something. I don't think it makes a lot of sense, but, you know, okay, whatever. It's
I feel like the Gorn aren't really, you know, stealing shuttlecrafts generally. They're not
you
interested
would
in that.
Think not. Anyway, they do run to the black hole and do the cool like maneuver that
It looks great.
I thought that was a really cool idea too. It's like, well, the intense gravity is going to give us a light delay, and then we eject the thing that's about to explode out the back, and then we make a presumably like make a sharp turn and go the other way, and they see us, and then they see the explosion, and they're like, well, okay, they died, and they leave, and we're fine. It's all good. I thought that was a fun little thing. Yeah,
a little variant on the Picard maneuver there. Where he used the poor Ferengi sensor to create an echo.
Right, involving the speed of light and yeah, exactly right. This is a different thing. So that was and it ends with Lon, you know, basically saying, "No, I'm not going to high five you, because what about next time? They're still out there, and they're gonna come back."
And then like, Pike is like, "We'll be ready." Yeah. Next time it will be single combat on a weird planet. So it'll be fine.
I liked the Uhura and Hammer subplot basically because we got to get a little bit more detail about both those characters. And, you know, Hammer's cranky, but he's actually, you know, he's an old softy underneath. And
he doesn't like teamwork, though.
And Uhura is still kind of like struggling to find her place, but thinks that engineering is interesting, and she does solve the problem. And they hold hands in order to like not get sucked into space
not
at the
die.
End. And I think in the most telling moment is he says that basically he doesn't fear death because he feels that everybody's got a purpose and he's fulfilled his purpose and that's fine. He asks her what her purpose is that she'll be fulfilling, and she's like, I don't have one. Does that mean we're not going to die? And he's like, well, let's find out. Because she doesn't know. Like, she doesn't know what her purpose is, and she's still searching. And that was all really good. And Hammer is a very fun character, and I like that Uhura is like, so Einar in Starfleet with not, you know, non-violent, like, what's that all about? And he's like, yeah, I fix the stuff that, like, okay, but like it's like you fix the phasers, and the phasers are used for violence. He's like, well, you know, Starfleet's mission is good, so it's fine. That's it's like right. he's okay with it. I guess
he doesn't want to actively hurt people, but he is okay defending the ideals. Of the Federation of Starfleet.
Yeah.
So he's okay being having his hand in it, but he's not gonna, one assumes, shoot a Gorn.
Right. That was all good. I'm a little baffled by the medical subplot with number one.
Well, they needed to get her out of the way, so that
so that Lon could step to the front. I get that, but the rather than just sort of saying, well, she's wounded and she's down here and so she's out of commission, they did this thing where they're like, we're going to stitch her up because we've got stone knives and bearskins, right? It's the I forget what they call archaeological medicine, not sure is the right term for it, but okay. And what's strange about it is there's that moment where she's like, no, use the blood on the other person and I'll just tough it out. And they're like, okay. And then there is a quick coda where we see that Mbenga basically gave her his blood instead. I expected there to be something else.
A reason?
There, like that there was a, like there would be a some other kind of choice that gets made or dilemma or something. And instead it just seemed like a sequence of scenes that happened without quite, I don't know. I guess technically she's willing to sacrifice her life to save that other person. And that's part of doing triage is about making those decisions. It just felt like it was not quite on focus as I hoped it was.
I don't think it was necessary, but I think that they were trying to show because La'an is acting first officer.
Right.
And so kind of show, compare and contrast her with Una and how she is, you know,
and this,
she's been doing this forever.
Right.
So she will sacrifice herself and realizes all that.
Blah, and it's blah, all dealing with death, too. So it is the not only is it the triage situation, which fundamentally triage is about who can you save and who can wait for treatment and who is beyond treatment and who can you save. And Una making that decision to say, like, no, save that person and I'll tough it out. By the way, I really like the moment. It's like, you said you were okay. And she says, I may have miscalculated. That's a good moment. I don't know. I felt like those scenes were missing something. I know why they're there thematically. I just, because they were the C plot and they seemed the least necessary. Whereas Uhura and Hammer, not only did they cleverly tie into the main plot, but it was some really good, fun character stuff down there as Hemmer with his horribly broken hand gets to tell Uhura what to do. That part was really good.
Yeah, and I didn't think that there was all that much tension from the sick bay stuff other than Una possibly dying, but we know she wasn't going to because the Mbege says that, you know, everything is not working, but all we can do is stabilize people. And so if there's everyone's fine, but they're not going to get better until we get out of here.
Right.
Which isn't very high stakes to me. Like if we are being hunted by Gorn and you're telling me all the people who are hurt are stable, that to me seems like a good thing.
Yeah. And you could have had them dealing with death where they try to save somebody and they can't or all that. And that's all just sort of gone by the wayside. Also with all of this, this is going to happen every time now. Every time there's a catastrophe on the Enterprise and they're losing transporters or they're losing power, I'm going to be like, what about Mbenga's daughter? Is she still there? Does he have to beam her out whenever there's an emergency? I don't know.
There's a lot of questions about that. And we will never speak of her again.
No, there's a cold fusion power supply that just runs on the transporter buffer and it's fine. Medical transporters are fine.
I assume it will come up again.
I think it will absolutely come up again. That's the point of Strange New Worlds, right? Is that you meet these characters who have these things that are ongoing, even though the stories are not ongoing, the character stuff is ongoing. That makes sense.
Yes. And then, so thinking about tension, we've talked about, you know, so the problem when we talked in Discovery about prequels is kind of, you know, what's going to happen next, right? Because it is a prequel to something you've already seen. And for Strange New Worlds, they've added all these characters that we know what happens to them. And so that, I think, for Pike makes it interesting because he knows part of what's going to happen to him. And so that's a really interesting kind of character thing for him and for us. But like for Uhura, she was in danger with Hemmer, but we knew she was not going to die.
Right.
And so I it's kind of, you know, they're a main character and you know that chances are first season, fourth episode, a main character is not going to
probably die
on the show. But I feel like, you know, for certain she's not going to die because she is serving on the Enterprise several years later. So
there's a thing that I think they might be doing already that I hope they are, and I hope they address this in a later episode. And it's something that we've talked about here before. There's that moment where Pike is like, I believe in the Enterprise. We're going to, you know, she's going to be fine. We're going to get through this. And I wondered to myself in that moment, has he figured out that since he's not being irradiated on a trainee vessel, that the Enterprise is going to be fine? And the fact that some people died, but he's fine and the Enterprise is fine, that, you know, is he thinking that, or is he considering that and dismissing it? Like, we haven't really addressed that part of his story, which is if his fate is true, it also means he's not fated to die before then. And that would be not, going counter to the theme of this episode and him sort of like resisting death, being like impervious to it. And I wonder if they're maybe going to have that philosophical conversation down the road, and that might be an interesting meta conversation for all of us about all these characters who we know survive, right? Because we know they survive. Yeah. Like Chapel's not going to die. Mbenga's not going to die. Pike's not going to die until he's not going to die. He's going to get irradiated and then go to Talos. Spock is going to only die in a parallel timeline later, much later, right? So we're left with La'an, and we're left with Ortegas, and we're left with Number One. We don't know her fate. You know, there's a small collection of characters. We don't know their fates. Now, your other point is exactly right, which is it's a TV show. The Enterprise isn't going to die. The characters aren't going to get killed. And you don't need to have the threat of life or death of your characters to enjoy the ride. That's all also true. I wonder if they're going to address the main point here about Pike's fate, which is that it also suggests that he can't be killed until then. And what's he thinking there? What's he thinking?
I wonder if what they'll do is we'll see an episode where he knows he's not going to die, and so he makes some sort of decision that results in many other people dying.
Yes.
And he thinks, because I'm safe, everyone in this room or whatever will be safe as well. And it turns out he's horribly wrong.
That's what I mean by I wonder if they know what they're doing here, because I had that feeling like maybe this is setting up something where we're gonna look back on this and say at several points Pike showed this great confidence and people died, but they got out of it. And maybe that's one of these kind of character arc things that's going through is with the Gorn, we lost 10 people or 7 people or whatever. But you know, you made the risky call, but were you making the risky call because it was the right call or because you had no fear of death yourself? And, I could see why they might not want to address that issue, but I feel like they have to. I feel like that they have to, even if they're just hanging a lantern on it, I feel like they're going to say, Captain, do you behave like you can't die? And I think you're right that it would be quite a moment if he gets a bunch of people killed. Because he thought that they were all going to skate out of it because he'll skate out of it. And all that happened was he survived and the other people died. That would be very troubling. And he would realize he was going down a dangerous path. That would be good stuff. I would like that.
Yes. I imagine. I in my mind, I have just thought of an episode that I have nothing, no plot other than it opens with the court-martial of Captain Pike.
Oh.
Because he has, you know, been reckless and killed, got a number of his crew members killed. And then we flash back to on the bridge of the Enterprise. Mm. And then we know he doesn't get court-martialed because we know he doesn't.
Well, it's because Ben Finney faked all the evidence. Sorry, exactly. Making more TOS references. Strange New Worlds has just done something to me. I'm just going to do make TOS references now.
And so I only brought that up because I don't think it's a problem really, because like as you said, it's a TV show. I know the main characters are not going to die, much like, okay, this is spoilers for Game of Thrones, but if you have not read or seen the first season of Game of Thrones, there is something very shocking that happens at the end, and it works because you're not expecting it to.
Right, but this is literally Star Trek, and it's the USS Enterprise, and guess what? The Enterprise is not going to get crushed in a brown dwarf.
Exactly.
It's not going to get eaten by a black hole, and it's not going to get blown up by a Gorn. It's more in the fun of the telling of the story, because if you've got to believe that at any moment the Enterprise could blow up, I don't know what you're doing. Because go watch Star Trek 3, I guess. Star Trek Beyond, I guess, right? Yeah, okay, yeah, there you go.
Yeah, they blow up in that. I just thought it was unnecessary for them to show that flange or whatever that was keeping Uhura and Hemmer attached to the floor.
Right.
Almost breaking.
Unnecessary.
It's not going to break.
Unnecessary.
It's fine.
I thought I had that same thought, which was having them be there and almost be pulled out and holding hands and all that was enough. I did not need to see the chain attached to the floor and the thing cracking and all that. I was like, then is Uhura going to make it? Yeah.
Gee, I hope she does.
Yeah, she's going to make it. Like, yeah. So, yeah, I think that
was a minor quip. So I really did like this episode, despite us talking a lot of less than enthusiastic things that but there are points at which small things that didn't work and they stand out because it was such a good episode.
Yeah,
I think.
Yeah. I think this shows all of the potential of the show. And it's actually one of the things that I was hoping to get from this show that we did not get as much of from Discovery, which is where they dwell so much on the characters, which is Discovery's thing. It's very emotional and all that. But you end up with these plots that are just diluted down to nothing over many, many, many episodes. And that can be a lot. And this was, like I said, loaded with plot, plus the character stuff is there, and it felt like a TOS episode in the sense of them trying to solve this problem and all of that. Like, again, maybe to a fault, eventually, if every episode feels like a TOS episode and we can name what the episode is, it's probably a little too close, hewing a little too close to TOS, but like I think this was a lot of fun, good episode. Talking about like where they're going and what their choices are, I think is interesting, but I've been entertained by all of it, and even the last week I felt wasn't as good as the first two. This one is I thought better than the first two, so I'm very happy with how it's going.
Yes, and I think we said this about season one of Discovery, that it's so interesting to watch a new Star Trek show that is being acted by people who know Star Trek. And so they don't have this awkward kind of, I need to figure out how to say these ridiculous things right. to get over. So this, like, I feel like these characters, I mean, a couple of them, three of them have been playing these characters for previously. So, yeah. But it feels like everything is immediately, like they are comfortable in those roles mm-hmm. immediately. And that goes for everyone. So, you know, you watch the first season of TNG and I don't think you can say the same of those actors, but it's a very different scenario there. So it's just fun to see it.
Yeah, I did have a moment where I was remembering that there's a whole season of Discovery with Pike on the bridge of the Discovery. I was like, yes. Oh yeah, 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 it's really good. That's why they did this show, is the Anson Mount. Mm-hmm. Was really good. And then when Rebecca Romijn and Ethan Peck came in, they were really good too. So
yeah, and they continue to be really good.
But everybody spent all that time. Yeah. Oh yeah. It's mm-hmm. all, it's the casting is good. The character delineation has been really solid. Yeah. Yeah. I'm happy. I'm in fact, the thing that makes me the saddest is that there are only 10 episodes. It sounds like that's pretty much mm-hmm. their standard now, is they're going to do 10 mm-hmm. episodes. It's like, now this is a show that I'd like 13 episodes of, but I'm not going to get it. I'm going to get 10 at a time.
Or 24 or whatever. How many?
Sure. 27, whatever that was mm-hmm. in that first season of TOS. So that's a bit much, but they'll get there in 3 years. They'll figure that part out. How did you feel about, I definitely saw some rumbling online about, like, people are like, oh, what do you mean the Gorn? Like, the Gorn are not as definitively a mystery as like the Romulans, where they literally said, we've never, ever, ever seen the face of a Romulan before. They look like Vulcans, right? But
great moment.
But the Gorn, episode. Like, does it bother you that the Gorn are canonically, like, they were sort of surprising and mysterious in Arena, and here we've got, like, well, no, actually the USS Enterprise had many tussles with the Gorn long before Kirk fought the Gorn captain.
It doesn't bother me, because I think they're threading, so it's only been one episode and we'll see if they bring the Gorn back, but they threaded the needle, because I was watching it, being one of those Star Trek fans who, like, you better not mess up this canon, or if you do, conceptualize it,
right.
At least give me a good reason for it, right? And I think they did it well in that the canon is that the Federation has not encountered them, like seen them. That doesn't mean that people who aren't in the Federation, i.e. colonists on random
right.
colony ships, haven't encountered the Gorn and been eaten by the Gorn. And we don't see the Gorn. They don't talk to the Gorn, except for their flashes
right.
from the shuttlecraft. So I think that, the clicking sound, the creepy clicks. And I did wonder, oh, are we going to see a glimpse of the Gorn in her memories? And we didn't, which I think is the right choice.
Yeah. I think we will. I suspect that we will see the Gorn eventually. But,
maybe it'll be the season finale.
Maybe.
A cliffhanger, right? Because we're bringing back all the old Star Trek things. You need to have a cliffhanger.
Right. But that's the... That's how I feel too, is like, look, first off, it's not like they said, well, we've never seen the Gorn before, we don't know anything about them. It's like there's room in there to bend the canon a little bit, and I'm okay with it, because what we said earlier, it's actually kind of a good choice in terms of having a creepy alien adversary who we've heard of before but we don't know a lot about. And unexplored mm-hmm. areas of Star Trek canon are not bad. Not bad here. That said, I am reminded that one of the things that I really wished for this show back when it was announced is that they would not have to play too much with canon, because they could just go out and go to a planet and have a weird thing happen there. And so mm-hmm. that's very much what we were saying at the beginning of this episode, which is it's okay to have standalone episodes that are not tied into Star Trek canon in some way. That's just fine. So, but it doesn't bother me. The canon thing with the Gorn doesn't bother me. We'll see next week with Vulcan stuff. We'll see how it treats Amok Time. But again, I think there's some room in some of these places to paint in some of the unpainted corners of Trek canon, and I'm okay with it too. But like, I think the Gorn is too good a choice to not make it, just because you could argue canon interpretation, right? Like, that's not a good enough reason. Like, it's not expressly forbidden, and it's a good creative decision, so you should do it.
You should do it. Yes, and the Gorn have been popping up anyways. Like, you know, Lorca had a Gorn skeleton.
Gorn skeleton. That's right.
His whatever that was, his torture closet. So.
Yes, that's right.
So I think that it's
office full of his victims. Yeah.
Yeah. You know, weird things that he collects. So, and like I said, I mean, when you think about iconic Star Trek aliens, you have to include the Gorn. So to they're right there. You can't not do them. Now, I would have a problem if in this season they somehow encounter the Borg. And I'd be like, no, thank you.
Well, that's like how Enterprise did it, right? Where they had one, they had like a Borg scout and nobody really understood what it was. And we knew, but nobody else knew. And they did that with the Romulans too. And it's like, yeah, I think you got to lay off the Romulans. I think you can't go there. But the Gorn is, I don't mind it, right? We got one, it's one episode literally that matters at all. And even there, it's more like they're not really familiar with them. And that's not the same as that we've never encountered them or anything like that. So
it's kind of like they're boogeymen. We know their reputation. We've never interacted with them,
right,
except for Lon. And you think, well, maybe are they really that bad? You're kind of overreacting. And it turns out, yes, they're bad.
They're bad.
They're not nice lizard people.
Yeah, and they're not going to be like when we see them in TOS. They're blowing up outposts and trying to lure starships and stuff too. So, there's no hope that this is going to get much better, right? Like that's not what it's, they are. They're bad and they're going to be an antagonist perhaps again.
Maybe there will be another. I have a small drawing of a Gorn on my bedroom wall.
And just get
a fun Scott fact.
And if it goes the way that we don't want them to go, then in season two, they'll do, Arena 2.
Oh, no.
Where it's like Pike ends up crashed on a planet somewhere with a Gorn, and he's like, oh, well, I guess I got to fight him. Like,
But then it'll be like the episode that now I'm completely blanking on, where they only speak in metaphors on TNG.
Darmok.
So it'll be an Arena Darmok mashup.
Oh, interesting. Interesting. They'll flash. Pike will just have a flashlight. And he'll flash it at him, and they'll learn to communicate with flashes.